Next guest on the programme this morning lives in West Sussex and is both a leading international war crimes barrister and has just released her first book, Mindfulness at Work and Home. Gillian Higgins has been involved in trials ranging from the Rwandan genocide to the Balkan Wars, and she can also help you focus on your body and your breathing. How so? Well, here's our conversation.
For the last 22 years, I've been practicing as largely a war crimes barrister in London. And more recently, I have been learning about researching and practicing mindfulness and teaching others really within the profession and beyond.
I knew that. I'm just wondering how people are listening to this now in their car or at home will react to that, because they're so wide apart in many ways. Why?
Why? Because I'd reached a point in my career where, having listened to lots of distressing evidence and really becoming a mother for the first time, I thought I just need to do something to reduce my stress and be effectively more present as a parent and deal with anxieties and start to enjoy it a little bit more.
Okay, that all makes sense. That makes sense to me. So first of all, I mean, that sounds like quite an extraordinary job. So a leading international war crimes barrister, 22 years, what does that mean? What does that mean you do day to day?
It has meant that I have lived in different places in the world. I've practiced in Tanzania, I've investigated in Kenya, and I've appeared in international courts in The Hague as well as national courts, and defended individuals charged with war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide.
You defended them?
I did.
Has that sometimes meant you've had to wrestle with your conscience?
Not really, in a sense, because our job as barristers is to make sure that the individual has a fair trial. So I am trained to do that and to defend robustly their interests.
Have any of your clients ever been found guilty of war crimes?
There has. In fact, the first individual that I worked on his case was Alfred Musema, and he was convicted in respect of the Rwandan genocide. And that was when I was a pupil barrister. So way back at the beginning, I was part of a team that worked on that particular case.
Just talk us through that. Remind us about what happened in the Rwandan genocide.
Well, it was back in 1994. And in essence, it was a conflict between the Hutus and the Tutsis. And it led to estimates of over 800,000 deaths of Tutsis, alongside which there were also deaths of Hutus and subsequent murders of Hutus in Zaire and beyond.
And in a conflict like that, what constitutes a war crime then?
Well, it's a crime that takes place, there are various definitions, but it's a crime that takes place within the context of a conflict. So you might be looking at murder, you might be looking at torture, and the rules that define those sorts of crimes.
The rules set out by who?
The rules set out in the various conventions, so there's a Hague Convention and the Geneva Convention, and then there are rules that are derived from those that apply in the various tribunals where these crimes are tried in, for example, The Hague, the International Criminal Court, and the ad hoc tribunals which dealt with the Balkan Wars and also the Rwandan genocide.
And those rules apply whether your country or the people you're fighting for are signed up or not?
No, they don't, and there are particular rules which apply to that. Whether you're a member state of the International Criminal Court, if you're not, then the reach is very limited. But I don't want to get too technical on that in this stage.
No, understood. But what about the individuals involved in the conflict? You know, war is not a business where things are straight down the line sometimes, I suppose. Some people who are accused of war crimes thinking about that when they carry out those actions?
As you say, it's not straightforward, and there are crimes that are committed on all sides of the conflict, and often what you find is that sometimes it's one side that is tried more than the other, and you get a political influence in the sorts of perhaps cases or individuals that are put on trial. Often the courts are looking at those who are most responsible, because you can imagine that courts can't try everybody involved in a conflict.
No. And most of the time, I'd imagine we hear about the big cases and, you know, Milosevic, for instance, in Bosnia.
Yes.
But are you talking about individuals and their actions as well that you've been defending and working with?
I haven't personally, but for example, in Rwanda, there's a system where Rwanda itself and judges there, a system called the Gacaca, where individuals at a low level in villages have been tried in a more informal judicial setting, so that there is a reckoning within the national country as to what happened and who was responsible. So a grassroots sort of justice, if you like.
Okay, yeah, it's quite difficult to sort of pick your way through it, isn't it? I mean, you must have, being in court, heard and seen horrific evidence of war crimes. How do you deal with that? How does that leave you feeling at the end of the day?
The reality is, I think, that after having practiced for so many years, there are some images and some testimonies that don't really ever leave you. And it's how you deal with that. So while we're trained as barristers to present a case and defend robustly interests, of course, we're also human beings. And that, after time, can affect you. And it was, I suppose, one of the reasons why I started to look at mindfulness and how to deal with that residual stress or anxiety that sometimes you can experience.
But that sort of wraparound care of essentially employees, you're working for a law firm, are you? No, you're working as an independent.
As barristers, we are self-employed and we're members of chambers. So we've also got our own business effectively to look after as well.
All right. So you can't go to HR and say, I've witnessed something today that has shocked me. I'm struggling with it. It's affected me. Can I have some help?
Exactly that. And in the last 5 years or so, there have been real initiatives to look at the self-employed bar, something called wellness at the bar, to well-being at the bar, rather, to be able to try and tackle some of that. Because where do you go if you are suffering and you've got nobody to turn to internally? And moreover, as a barrister, we eat what we kill. So in a sense, we are as good as our last case, and therefore sometimes reticent about admitting that actually we're finding things a bit difficult.
A sign of weakness.
A sign of weakness, indeed.
And maybe not the sort of profession where that sort of intervention might be welcomed. People would see it as...
Exactly.
Come on, toughen up and get on with it.
Absolutely. And I think that's also the point about mindfulness. When I started to practice mindfulness, it took me at least 6 months to come out of what I refer to as the mindful closet, where I started to actually talk about my practice, because part of my fear was that people might think that I was somehow weak or needed a crutch, where actually it was something that emboldened me as a lawyer and made me a lot more responsive and thoughtful and able to deal with my stress.
So let's segue straight away from your professional work like that into mindfulness. Well, set it out for us, because people probably have heard a lot of us talk about mindfulness, a lot of talk about it. What do you think it means?
For me, it's about trying to be in the here and now. So making that... available to us to be aware of our moment-to-moment experience. We spend so much time flitting into the past with regrets or future concerns or worries that actually we miss the uniqueness of the present moment. We miss how it feels to hold the steering wheel. We miss the first sip of coffee in the morning. We miss the temperature or feel of the water in the shower. And actually, when we drop into our present moment experience, it's a really good anti-stress device, because we're activating our nervous system that is called the rest and digest, which allows us to drain off cortisol and adrenaline.
And can you do that as you're going through your busy day?
Absolutely. So part of the ethos that I wanted to convey is that you can do this everywhere, at any time, and it can be done by anyone. You don't have to sit cross-legged on a little stool and meditate.
That's good, because I've got time for that.
If you don't have time to do that, you may also want to do that. But you can also do it as you walk to your car in the morning and take note of your surroundings. You can do it as you arrive at the studio and sit here and really sense your arrival and take a moment to experience what it's like to be here on Radio Now.
does it work for you, I think is the question, isn't it? What can I do that's going to affect me, that's going to work for me, and what works for one person may not work for somebody else?
Absolutely. So I think for me, when you start to feel the benefit of sleeping better, being less willing to be distracted, being more willing to be present with your child when they ask you to play Playmobil when it's probably not your thing, but actually you know the benefit of being present to her and yourself. When you start to realise that actually it's a way of dealing with your anxiety, and the inner critical voice that we all have that tells us we're not good enough isn't a fact about us, then those sorts of things, you know, mindfulness really helps with all of that.
My guest is Gillian Higgins. Her book is Mindfulness at Home and Work, A Simple Guide. That's what we need. That's what we need. And this is not a massive book. It's quite, what I would say, an accessible size and thickness.
It's supposed to be friendly as right. well as simple. So there are tips, hints, practices that you can use everywhere. And so it's mindfulness for everyone at any point in time, both at work and home.
Right. And what would be a simple mindfulness exercise that we could perhaps try now?
Well, we could, for example, sense our arrival at the desk. We could sense how we're sitting and just ease into and perhaps relax across our shoulders and take a couple of deep breaths, lowering your gaze if you choose to, Danny.
Oh, sorry.
And noticing the physical sensation of your in-breath and also your out-breath. And just taking a few moments to really arrive where we're sat here. And to deepen your breath slightly. Perhaps breathing down from the bottom of your feet, up to the top of your head, and back down again. Just really taking a moment for yourself to allow any worries to come and go, and any thoughts that arrive to allow those to come and go too. And when you're ready, just returning to your natural breath and back here in the studio.
It's funny, isn't it? Because it's a bit of an unnatural environment to do that in here.
It is.
This is... But taking that, you know, that moment where you try not to think about anything else and you concentrate on what your body is doing, because it's quite a complex machine, this, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's probably not a bad thing.
Well, it just, for me, it's a sanctuary. It's a. Yeah. I know that at any point, whether I'm about to go into court or raising a difficult argument, I can just breathe deeply and take a moment for myself before I have to stand up and deliver whatever it is I'm doing that day. And similarly at home, sometimes we get back and we're not ready for the argument or the discussion or whatever. So the ability to just be able to silently for yourself tune in with where you are right now does help.
That's fascinating. And I love the fact that you kind of picked up on that and didn't, and actually did something with it. Keeping the two things alongside each other seem almost incompatible, but they work for you.
It works for me. I have to admit, it's not always a mindful process, being mindful. You know, it's not always mindful writing a book, but what I try and do is plan time or ring-fence events so that I know what I'm doing, and actually tapping into my mindfulness helps me as a lawyer and it helps me as a parent.
So in a week, you might be practicing mindfulness and teaching people mindfulness on a Tuesday, and Wednesday you're in court in some, you know, complicated international war crime trial.
So over the last 2 weeks, I've been teaching mediation because I'm a mediator as well in Istanbul. I've been teaching in London. I've been in court, and I've also been looking at finishing up for the book and preparing a launch. So different things, and being able to balance rather than juggle, I think, is my approach.
Yeah, because juggling, we always drop something if you're juggling, don't you? Whether it's a ball or a vase.
And juggling is exhausting. And so it's about how do we pause to take stock before the moment's gone. You know, the research shows that our brain wanders, I think it's 46.9% of the time, into the past and the future. Mm-hmm. We have a negativity bias, so we're drawn to the death, destruction, despair. When we're in the present moment, we can notice if that happens and just allow that to pass. And that is rejuvenating in some way.
And just finally, a question I wanted to just finish up with is, your professional work as a barrister seems very specialised. How did you get into that? Is that something that you had a calling to, perhaps?
I was a commercial barrister to start with, and I heard a talk given by two barristers talking about war crimes at a human rights event. I was fascinated, and I just thought, that's what I want to do. It's politics, history, language, travel, law. And so I tracked them down, and I applied to their chambers, and I eventually got in after did a year's training with them and became a permanent member in their chambers, and it all went from there, really.
Does it cloud your view of humanity with some of the things you've witnessed over the years? You know, how do people get to the stage where they do things that the most of us would regard as utterly horrific and inhumane and despicable?
I think the reality is that some crimes are simply inexplicable, and there is no reason or rhyme or understanding that. But I think what I'm interested in as a lawyer and as a mediator is, where do you go from there? How do you rebuild societies so that there has been justice, which then enables future peace?
Could you give us an example of where you think that's worked well in the world?
Well, I think Rwanda's attempts to deal with, at grassroots level, what has happened village to village is an example of that, where the country tries to at least grapple with some of its past to forge a better future.
That's Gillian Higgins from West Sussex speaking to me about her career as an international war crimes barrister and the release of her first book, Mindfulness at Work and Home.
BBC Sussex.
Made in Sussex, for Sussex.